Hey Liverpool fans, have you seen the latest release? At Anfield Index, we've teamed up with Liverpool FC to announce that the brand new 24-25 LFC Nike home kit and anthem jacket are out now, and they're hotter than ever. The brand new kit pays homage to the legendary Rome 1984 side, featuring sleek pinstripe detailing that brings a touch of history to our modern game. Whether you're cheering from the cop or watching from home, you'll feel the spirit of the Reds coursing through every stitch. The best part? You can grab yours today. The new kit and training range are available in official stores, online, and through the LFC store app. Don't wait, order now and be ready to show your Liverpool pride and style. Get your hands on the new 24-25 LFC home kit and anthem jacket today. Let's make this season unforgettable. You'll never walk alone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rival Recon here on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Harry Sethi. The Reds finally secured Champions League qualification last night as Tottenham lost 2-0 away to Chelsea, ensuring Liverpool will be back in Europe's premier competition next season, with Arne Slot looking likely to be at the helm. As the season stumbles towards its conclusion, with nothing but pride left to play for, our attention inevitably shifts towards the departure of the great Jurgen Klopp, and the hope that his side are able to muster enough in these final few games to provide him with a satisfying and emotional send-off. In Klopp's penultimate home game, a sentence that still fills me with sadness, Liverpool will take on an injury-laden Tottenham this Sunday on Flag Day at Anfield. Joining me on the pod to discuss Ange Postecoglou's first season as Tottenham manager, the positives, negatives and plans for the future, I'm delighted as ever to welcome back European football writer for The Athletic and head of TIFO football, Seb Stafford-Bloor. And as mentioned across previous pods, this episode will cut off at 30 minutes for those of you listening on the free side. However, should you wish to listen on and gain access to all of our full shows here on Anfield Index Pro, simply sign up on the website for a subscription for as little as $4.99 a month, or the price of one of those oat flat whites that you're looking to crack down on with the show. Well, welcome back, Seb. Good to speak with you again.
Thanks for having me back, Harry.
Yeah, you know, a handful of games left in the Premier League season. I think listeners to this podcast, where we, of course, be focusing in on each and every Premier League game, I'm guessing the listeners have been more excited for a episode of this one than perhaps they have been over the past few weeks, as, of course, sort of Liverpool's season faltered into the sort of the ambitions that were left to really fight for, I suppose. But we're not here to talk about Liverpool today necessarily. We're here to talk about Spurs, and also conscious that we're speaking here ahead of this evening's game, which is obviously Spurs against Chelsea, ahead of the weekend's game up at Anfield. And I'm going to ask you a question I've asked you before, Seb. Given that we are here at the end of the season, near enough, Just for your thoughts, I mean, there's still games to play, still ways in which your mood can be influenced even further, but how are you feeling at the moment about how the season's unfolded, and maybe how Ange Postecoglou's taken on this project?
Yeah, I'd say it's kind of solid 7 out of 10, Harry. I think there's been a lot of good. There's been a really strong intent to play good football, which is nice. And I think anyone who remembers me on this podcast last year and probably the year before that will remember that we weren't exactly...
You weren't being thrilled.
No, we weren't aesthetically blessed by Antonio Conte's football, and it was pretty hard in the eyes. So I've enjoyed that. Lots of new ideas. I think the thing is that there's been a lot of imperfections too, and the squad is... When Conte left and Postecoglou came in, it was a pretty dramatic change in direction, and still underway. I suppose it's like turning an ocean liner, isn't it? Like you're not gonna do a 180 in a single season. So the longer the season's gone on, also I think the more the limitations of the squad have been shown. Yeah, it feels like it's kind of petering out now and everybody's sort of waiting for the summer. I think Champions League is probably gone, looking at the table. We are recording before the Chelsea game, but I suspect Spurs will lose that, unfortunately. But that's okay. Europa League is a step forward. So I'm still vaguely positive.
And at the start of the season, I suppose you spoke a little bit there about the style of play, not being aesthetically blessed and things like that. And I think in terms of if you were going to have given Postecoglou a number of, like, you know, I guess, key priorities to work on for the season, what would they have been? And sort of how do you think he's done with those? As you said, there have been, you know, some real high points as well as some teething issues.
I think for me at this stage in my kind of football watching life, what mattered was an intent to actually play. So right. I'd got really bored of sitting deep, counterattacking, not really having any sort of creativity in possession, not really knowing what to do on the front foot unless it involved Harry Kane and Son Heung-min. And so from that perspective, I wanted to see a braver team. I don't really mind if they lose. I don't really mind if they can see goals. I'm a little bit different, I guess, in that way. But I just wanted a group of players who had the courage to compete properly and try and do new things. And so clearly that's taken place. I think, unfortunately for Spurs and Postecoglou, one of the limitations is probably the lack of a really suitable forward for what for the type of football that he's trying to play, trying to install. And so as a result, you have a situation where they play pretty well for maybe 60, 70 yards. And then when they get into the final third, it looks like they're playing in a foot of grass and the ball moves very slowly. There's no movement and moves break down. So, you know, but I that sort of overarching problem aside, I think there's been a really nice cultural reset as well. And the type of footballer that we've seen given game time at Spurs this season, I've been pleasantly surprised by nearly all of the new arrivals. I think everybody has done pretty well. And yeah, so that was the main thing for me. And so that's kind of objective reached in my eyes.
And you mentioned there, so getting into the final third, and then perhaps that's, you know, that's where things become trickier with that absence of a forward that perhaps really fits the style Postecoglou is trying to implement. And of course, one forward that's absent is the departed Harry Kane. We've spoken beforehand about his influence on the team. We also spoke about just our feelings around him getting that move to Bayern Munich. And I know, of course, you're following the Bundesliga very closely. From my perspective, I've watched a bit more of it this season than usually, and being really intrigued to see how he would do. From my perspective, I'm not sure for many, it seems like it's been an outstanding personal season for Kane in the Bundesliga, albeit even if it ends up being one where he doesn't end up getting a trophy, that's still, you know, still possible. There could be some glory at the end of it. But just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, what you've seen of him since he's left. I know we're speaking about Spurs here, but I think it's impossible not to focus on how he's done in a new league, taking that step. And then a little bit on, I suppose, how Postecoglou has gone about trying to not fill that vacuum, but find a way to make Spurs still competitive in an attacking sense without such a figurehead there.
Well, I mean, Kane first, I think he's done really well. I think he's come into what is not a really functional Bayern Munich team and scored an awful lot of goals. He's been really, really influential. And he's kind of embraced the culture too, I think, pretty early on. He showed a willingness to to poke a little bit of fun at the oddity of the situation. So over here in Germany, he features in a few adverts, which mock him a little bit and his lack of German. He's a bit of a fish out of water, and he's been really good humoured about that stuff. And he's been eating Vice First with Thomas Müller and Glenn Golf and, Lederhosen and all the rest of it. So I think he's done as well as anybody really could have hoped. And he's been on the pitch, he's been absolutely outstanding, and his goal record speaks for itself. And also, we're speaking while, Bayern Munich are very much in a Champions League semi-final within...
Exactly.
And Kane's been a big part of that. So that's been excellent. From a Spurs perspective, I think one thing that grated with a lot of people was that, they didn't really replace him. They bought Richarlison the year before, and he had a very difficult first season. Kane was sold for 100 million euros, and it was we've already replaced him. And it felt a little bit like a sort of a cheap card trick from Tottenham, because I don't think really they signed Richarlison knowing that Kane was going to go the very next year. I don't really buy that. But I think the style of attacking has changed. So it's a team which has become much more dependent upon cutbacks, getting to the byline, using both inverting and overlapping fullbacks. And their delivery and their kind of ability to penetrate the box. The use of pace has been pretty heavy, obviously, with Brennan Johnson, Timo Werner actually won't play against Liverpool. He's injured and will miss the rest of the season, but he's been a kind of part of things. And I suppose one of the ways in which they tried to compensate for Kane's departure was they brought James Maddison in as a sort of an attacking playmaker, a central-based playmaker. And for probably 2 or 3 months, he played very, very well. Got injured, has not been the same player since, has been pretty, pretty meager in his contributions since returning from injury in kind of late January, early February. But that was kind of clearly the attempt to replace what Kane does when he drops off and, his playmaking from sort of those deeper areas. So it's a bit of a hodgepodge. I don't think it's wholly convincing offensively. I think clearly there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but at least there's been some imagination in trying to kind of reinvent things a little bit.
And you mentioned a couple of those players there who have arrived at the club arrived at the club this season, and sort of the various levels of influence they've had on the campaign. Timo Werner, one you mentioned. Of course, James Maddison, who I remember ahead of the previous fixture, felt like he was in very fine form, and it was influential on the day as well. I think he got an assist, on that day. Brennan Johnson's come in, Pedro Porro, Mickey van der Ven. The Kulusevski move was obviously finalized, I think, ahead of last season as well. Radu Dragosin, Vicario in goal. There's a lot of names here that I'm mentioning, and then Destiny Odogi as well, who's had a much more focal role this season. I wanted to just ask you to focus on, as you said, the majority of those players have had an influence and played their part, but I want to sort of get your view on which of those have maybe had more of a starring role and not surprise you, but actually been had a positive influence on the team.
I think I'll probably pick out Van der Ven, Harry, just because I'd watched him play for Wolfsburg, and I remember thinking, good player, loads of potential, a little bit accident prone still, and a little bit of maturing to do. But he's had some bad moments. He had a very tough time up in Newcastle recently, but other than that, he's been excellent, and his recovery pace has been a revelation.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's also, you got to put it in context. So Tottenham, sorry, I'm just going to adjust my chair there, Harry. Sorry about that. You got to remember that Tottenham, they spent years and years not really trying to replace Jan Vertonghen, let him get old and paceless, and didn't really do enough to get ahead of that. And then all of a sudden you bring in this guy who, well, can keep pace with anybody in the league. And it's quite fun. And also, obviously, the tactical knock-on is that you can play a slightly higher line. And it's been very successful. But then I think also you could make a case for all of them. I know Vicario has had some real issues from corners, which is a separate conversation, really. And I think it's just kind of a team-wide weakness rather than a goalkeeping one. But yeah, everybody has kind of had that moment. Odogi is also out for the rest of the season, but has had a really good campaign. He looks so talented. Pedro Porro actually arrived last year in the middle of at the end of January 2023. He's been a revelation. He's been absolutely fantastic out on the right. His delivery is very, very good, but also his ambition with the ball has, when you've had a couple of years of Emerson Royale, for instance, and Matt Doherty, having someone of that caliber there is a real breath of fresh air. You know, it's been positive. I think the way to look at it is, what is this group going to look like in two or three years' time? Now, that doesn't matter so much in football, really, because club in Spurs' position can spend money on young developing players, but ultimately, the teams at the top of the league are going to spend £80-100 million on individuals every summer who are 25 and ready to drop straight in the team. So I don't think necessarily you always make progress that way, but it's quite fun to watch it happen, even if you don't get a kind of a payoff in league position.
I just want to ask you about Vicario, because I think when I was watching the North London derby last weekend, some Spurs fans I was speaking to around it had, I think I'd made a comment of just how impressed I'd been by Vicario earlier in the season and how he'd been a real success. And then I think a bit of arming and ahhing. And but that was before people discovered his weakness from corners. You just alluded to it there, you know, corners and defensive setups from corners. It's a team job to ensure that you're protecting people from corners, or just making sure that, that you're well set up. Is that overblown then, in terms of the way in which he's been targeted in that area? Because again, thinking back to the previous game between the two sides, and that stage of the season, I was seeing week after week after week just a young goalkeeper who had seemed to adapt to the league really well and was regularly making incredible saves.
Yeah, well, I don't think the reaction to it has been overblown. I think it's a problem, but I think the causes of the problem, I think it's been a little bit accusatory towards him, because I think a couple of things have happened. He has had weak moments, but I would say the rules around this area have become incredibly vague and seem to change every single game based on, right, what are you allowed to do as an attacking, from an attacking set piece, how much contact are you allowed to have with goalkeepers? Are you allowed to just kind of barge them?
Partially the Ben White discourse, isn't it?
I mean, Ben White thing, I actually didn't really have much of a problem with. It's a little bit peacocky, actually, the Ben White thing. It's just, it's a little gimmicky, you know, nothing. I think I would actually go back to the game against Everton at Goodison Park, where you had a situation where, I forget whether it was a corner or a set piece or a free kick, Harry, but you just had kind of James Tarkowski kind of not looking at the ball and kind of running into the goalkeeper and not making a lot of contact, but getting in the way. And you're thinking, okay, are those the rules now? That's what you're allowed to do when you, that's not an interference and that's not, you know. And so that's part of the problem. Another one is Tottenham have not been good enough at getting a body between the nuisance player and the goalkeeper. Like you used to be able to, well, I mean, we talked about Harry Kane earlier. Harry Kane was an enormous part of the way Spurs defended set pieces, as well as, you know, everything he did in an attack. And it's another big, hefty, good in the air player who's not there. And it feels like you need someone like that in the box, because at the moment, there are too many opponents having their way with Tottenham defenders. Van de Ven is a unit. Romero is Romero can look after himself. But other than that, there's not a lot of physicality, and I think that's what's needed, because it's not that he's coming for the ball and missing it. It's like he's not getting off his line because he's being pinned too easily, or he's being his kind of movement is being interrupted. And, well, a lot of things need to change. And actually, to be honest with you, one of them is you need the PGML to clarify what's actually happening and what's allowed here, because I'm not going to kind of jump down a rabbit hole of kind of VAR complaints, but the rules in every Premier League weekend in all sorts of ways are different every single week. And I feel a bit of sympathy for the players, not just Spurs players, but all kinds of players, like the tackling rules, the offside rule, the handball rule, it changes. And it's very, very hard. And this is just one of those areas. And it's just, I think it's Spurs' time at the moment to suffer from that. But I'm sure it's happening elsewhere in the league too.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Sephora, we know how you love to use makeup, skincare, hair care, and fragrances that work for you, but also how important it is to be in the know about the ingredients that are in them, which is why we created Clean at Sephora. Curated products from brands like Merit, Amika, Summer Fridays, and Fleur that have everything you want, minus certain ingredients you might not. Clean at Sephora is only at Sephora. Shop now at Sephora.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with libertyshield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit libertyshield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Absolutely, and I think that consistency or call for consistency around some of those rules you were referencing there, and also others that were introduced this season as well. I remember, I think one that particularly sticks in the craw is this gesturing for a yellow card, and how that season was deemed to be an automatic yellow card. And so you had these weird situations where players were being poleaxed and fouled, and
that bit's fine, but the yellow card you can't tolerate. You know, like
perhaps we're looking around, going, "Oh, yeah, that really hurt." You know, like and I get it, the whole gesturing for a card, but going, you know, ref, is that maybe not a yellow, and then being booked for the pleasure.
It's a difficult conversation to have without becoming angry about it, but yeah. I think we've got a kind of generation of referees in the Premier League at the moment who are really, really good at making kind of calm down gestures and strutting a little bit, and when it actually comes to making decisions, not so good. You kind of have to tune that out at the moment, because it's just too aggravating. You don't really know what you're going to watch every week. And I don't think I got into football for that, to sort of argue angrily on Twitter with sort of faceless people about, well, that's a free kick and that's probably not going to be next week. And if your arm's in this position, then don't worry about it this week, but it will be a penalty next week. It's so tiring. And I feel like it's most unfair on the players, actually. And that sort of that gesturing for a yellow card thing, okay, it's a bit naughty, but it's also, it's very human, right? You get smashed by someone and be like, hey, ref, do you want to book him? And yeah, I don't know.
I think the way in which I was thinking about it earlier in the season, and I hear what you're saying about sort of the, you know, potentially having some officials here who'd rather not make a big decision and would look for ways to avoid that. But I think the way in which it's come across to me at times, a few times a season, has been probably one of two different roles. Like, one, it's either like you're being reprimanded by a headmaster at school. This is very sort of like quashing. Don't have the audacity to complain about this. I know the rules. Or actually, on the other end of the spectrum, it's reminded me of, I mean, something I'm sure we've all experienced, where you're out with friends and you're looking to go to a nightclub, and there's a bouncer there, and
you're not coming in with those trainers on.
You quickly clock that actually there's very little you can say to appease this bouncer, and you just have to say nothing they do ultimately have the power to let you in or out of the venue. That's felt a little bit like that at points this season, where the players begin to gesture and realize, actually, wait, I'm not going to be allowed to do anything here. So yeah, I'd quite like to not have to focus on that. But to your point around, you know, a rule one week, not a rule the next week, that goalkeeping situation that you highlight there, it's definitely an area that I can imagine next season they look to amend some rules on, because it has been so, I think, you know, in the spotlight.
Yeah, I don't necessarily mind what the rule is. I just think there has to be some communication where you have to have, I don't know, Howard Webb, I guess, doing that silly little program with Michael Owen. I don't know how he got that job, by the way. And they go through it and say, right, well, this is fine and this is not, because defensively you have to be able to prepare for it, or as a goalkeeper, you have to know what to expect, or you can't have a situation where the expectation is, right, a centre back runs into a goalkeeper and it's kind of, it's okay because he only barged him a little bit. It's like, well, okay, but you know, is that loud? Is it not? So yeah, I like it. And I also think it's kind of, I think my heart sinks now when one of these things happens, because it's like, it's another one of those, another incident, another thing that we have to talk about, and it's draining. The refereeing in Germany is bad, but it's consistently bad in a familiar, normal way. And so it's fine. I don't think the refereeing situation in the Premier League is favouring one team or another. I just think it just wildly oscillates between extremes all the time. I feel like there should be a kind of a, you know how Opta release stat packs before Premier League weekends? There should be kind of updated 7-day refereeing guidance in England about, right, well, this week we're going to punish this. And, you know, if your studs are showing, you know, it's kind of okay if you elbow someone in the face. But if you graze someone with a stud on the shin, red card. Absolutely red card. Can't tolerate that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Crazy.
This
crazy
weekend, if you kick someone in the chest, we're gonna narrate that by saying both came in high. Both came in high. It's a very strange situation. Very strange situation. I won't yet talk about the previous game, because of course that'll bring us straight back onto this topic anyway. But I wanted to ask you about Ange Postecoglou, and I thought he's gone through an interesting sort of journey this season, because I think, given his personality and sort of the way in which he took to the job early in the season, and of course the success the team was having, the free flowing football at times, he, you know, of course seemed to be sort of a real fan favorite, and getting lots of favorable headlines and things like that. And then I don't know how it's unfolded throughout the season, but it seems like things have slightly changed a little bit in terms of how he's perceived, but actually seems to be carrying himself in exactly the same way, which he has done throughout the season. He hasn't changed whatsoever from my perspective. But I wanted to ask you sort of how you think he's done, maybe not tactically, because we can talk about that, but just how he's done in this job, because it was a big jump for him to take on this role, and there was a lot of scrutiny on him.
I think he's done really well. I think he's held himself and carried himself with real dignity. I think he's been given who he succeeded, or the series of managers he succeeded, his kind of attitude towards life and football is really refreshing, actually. And I also think he can be a bit grumpy, actually, and he's, I mean, I don't cover Tottenham anymore, so there are better people to ask about. It seems like he's not terrific when he's faced with criticism. Like, he was obviously, he's been asked about some of the set piece problems recently, and he doesn't react that well to it. But I think all I want is someone that I like as a human, because it's quite a precious virtue, a precious value in the game now, and he seems to have a really strong set of values. The videos of the club release that show him kind of interacting with members of the public always warm my heart. He's really good at things like that, and that's great. That's what I want in a coach. It's been a bit grumbly in the fan base, but then that's Tottenham. I also think that Postecoglou is an example of what happens when you're not from a traditional footballing country and you're given a little less time sometimes before some people start kind of trying to pick holes in you. Because of where he's had his success and because he's Australian and because he has a few sort of mannerisms that people are not used to in press conferences, I think he becomes a little bit of an easy target and people are very, very quick and premature and kind of jumping on his back a little bit. But I've got no problems. I think also, you know, the onus is on the club. Like, there's been a big renovation of the technical department and the way players are recruited. It's no longer kind of Daniel Levy just having a go and, you know, doing what he thinks is best, which is very good news that that's not, you know, that's not the sum total of the recruitment department anymore. And, you know, now the club have to equip their manager to move forward. And so, you know, there's a lot of positive things. There's criticism, but then you have to allow people to learn. Like, I was having a conversation on a different podcast not so long ago where the topic of Mikel Arteta's first season at Arsenal came up and Jurgen Klopp's first season at Liverpool. And, God, there were some awful moments in both of them. Like, Arteta especially, there was a period where Arteta might have been sacked because Arsenal was so bad during his first full year. And, you know, Klopp, you know, did a lot of good things in his first season. But I think we can all remember there were times when you thought, really, Hull away? And this is what it looks like? I'm not sure I haven't. Yeah, so it always happens, right? I'm not saying that Postecoglou is going to do for Spurs what Jurgen Klopp has done for Liverpool. Of course not. But, you know, you have to be able to put up with these things in the beginning if you want to pay off, I think.
Absolutely. And I think concerning relates to what you're saying there about, you know, when in a manager, the value of it just being a good person, right? And something you can actually listen to and speaks about football and topics in life in general in a refreshing manner, which I think has definitely been largely the case. And as you mentioned about him getting a little bit grumbly about some of the criticism around set pieces after the North London derby, I mean, I don't think there is a manager in the league who, you know, reacts with perfect poise to criticism. So I'm not,
Harry, like, it's worth remembering, like, and I would never describe it as anything other than a privilege, but I've had the opportunity to be in enough Premier League press conferences in my life to know how inane they are and how many stupid questions people are asked. And there was that moment earlier in the season where, you know, somebody from somewhere played the Happy Days theme tune or just nonsense. I get pretty grumpy too if I had to put up with that three times a week.
Exactly. Yeah, I think
that's what you got to remember. And so, like, if you work really hard and such and such from Sky Sports comes and asks you a kind of like a prickly question about, you know, your defense and your inability to prepare, I think I would snap his head off as well every now and again. It's only right, and I'm fine with that. It's the line between, you know, being a bit sensitive versus being incredibly conspiratorial. That's the one I've gone across, right?
No, I know what you're saying. I think
I'm referring to you there, right? But, you know,
it's hard to know. Yeah, very hard. But I think I've often found it funny. Look, I think the similar similar criticism can be made of Klopp, right? And I think when you see Klopp in these isolated instances, or actually, you know, in these other interviews or engaging with fans or outsiders, you know, maybe the real heat and focus of a season, you go, oh yeah, that's clearly a very well adjusted, very well adjusted man. That's an empath. And then so when you see him in these moments where he loses his cool, criticizes as a journalist or whatever it might be, you do actually forget at times, as you say, just how many of these questions they must be faced with at times, and how, yeah, for people who do work incredibly hard and are focused on the minutia of these jobs, how frustrating it must be at times. If you're able to drive those sorts of people to the point where they can come across as really crumbly and irritable, I think it is saying something. And I wanted to look at the fixtures this season and just ask you, like, to pick a handful of them, if there are ones that really stand out to you, of maybe examples of, you know, things going well, maybe like showing an example of where Postecoglou wants to move Spurs towards, and then other performances where you think, okay, and that shows the work that still needs to be done. Perhaps have there been games that have like particularly stood out to you this season?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. I think, well, you can probably split the season into kind of the first third and the rest. And yeah. I think the football, I remember the Manchester United game at home, the football there was largely very good. There were parts of the Liverpool game at home, I know everyone remembers that for different reasons now, but Spurs played pretty well for a lot of it. They found it quite difficult to break through such a low block, and Liverpool defended ever so well at White Hart Lane, and were really, really unlucky, obviously, for all sorts of reasons. But there was a kind of a willingness to play football in a big occasion, which really pleased me. I really enjoyed that. And, you know, there was particularly sort of some of the play between Madison at number 10, Son going through the defensive line, and, you know, a Richarlison or whoever else kind of being the kind of third point of the triangle. Some of those moves we saw were really great. There was a fantastic 20 minutes at the beginning of the game against Chelsea. Obviously, what happened next was Romero's red card, Van de Ven's hamstring tear, Madison's injury, a doggy's red card, like all sorts of everything that could go wrong, going wrong. But then I think if you went back and forgot everything that followed, but looked at that first 20 minutes and the quality of football that the Spurs played, went one up, were a toenail from being 2-0 up. It was a Son goal, which was a real work of art, which was unfortunately ruled out for offside. The game against Burnley away, where they beat a very poor team who are going to be relegated, but the ambition from very deep in their own half, I really enjoyed watching that. On the more negative side, I think everything since probably about November, it's been quite bleak. They've got results and they've been okay and they've won games. And they've had nice moments. Like they've been emotionally strong. There've been loads of comebacks. There was a really good stoppage time win over Brighton. There were wins against Brentford. There've been lots of good moments, but I think that a lot of the football's become quite stale. A lot of the energy's come out of it. A lot of the sort of the utility in the squad has been exposed. The problems in midfield have kind of come home to roost. I think I was speaking to somebody the other day, one of my Spurs supporting friends, and I think we said the same thing, which was that everybody got a bit excited with like Yves Bissouma and how good he was the first 6 weeks. And then he's been kind of awful ever since he got sent off at Luton. He's looked unfit and shaking confidence, just doesn't look like the same player at all. And so now, maybe it's unfair, but now that first 6 weeks of the season looks like the exception to the rule. So I think there are some upgrades needed. And also, I think one of the things that I found really dispiriting is that this group is only one injury away from being much, much worse. So at the moment, we are talking ahead of the Chelsea game. I have no idea who will start at left fullback against Liverpool. Absolutely no idea. There just isn't a player available. Davis is out for the season. The doggy is out for the season. Don't know who the other left-footed players are. No idea. And I think when you're in a situation where you play a 38-game season and you know that losing one of your fullbacks is kind of terminal to the way you play, at least, that's pretty frustrating. So, that's probably the area that there has to be a situation where you have, as a team that have a sort of a top four ambition, you can't have a situation where you're hoping that no one gets hurt or injured across the course of a Premier League. It's just not going to happen. So that's probably the main thing. And that realization creeping in post-Christmas has probably been a bit of a low point, because we're back in a situation which this used to be the case with Harry Redknapp's Tottenham, which was that there were certain players who, if they weren't in the starting lineup, you knew they weren't going to win. So anytime you see sort of, I suppose it was probably Luka Modric not being able to play, or at the time, you know, Aaron Lennon wasn't there, and so you'd have to play like Nico Kranjčar or someone like that. It's a little bit like that again. The quality is higher, but it's the same sort of situation. It is very, very thin, that squad.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today. Sports Social Podcast Network.